Jesus Christ at all. Because I've done one.
Good afternoon. I'd like to open up the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. Today is Tuesday, February 19th. Appreciate you joining us. As you can see, we have a couple of members that will be here shortly. We received notice they've been delayed slightly. A lot of constituents in the buildings these days, lots of things moving quickly, and we hope to do the same today. So we appreciate you being here. Again, House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. And with that, I will open a work session for the purpose of introducing committee measures.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 594 deems application or renewal of a driver's license, driver permit, or identification card as consent to be registered with the Selective Service System if an applicant otherwise is required by federal law to register. The Department of Transportation would be required to place notice of deemed consent to register with the Selective Service System on his or her application and instructs ODOT to adopt rules for implementation of the program.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And for the committee, remember, a vote in favor of merely introducing legislative concept is not a vote on the merits of the concept itself. It is not indicative of a member's opinion or position, if any, on the content of the measure. And with that being said, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that LC 594, dated June 29th, 2012, be introduced as a committee bill.
Thank you, Representative Witt. Moves that LC 594, dated June 29th, 2012, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? And for my co-chair, we are now just talking about a LC introduction as a committee measure of LC 594.
Okay.
That's as far as we've gotten. And is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, no objection. The measure is introduced as a committee bill. Thank you, and we will close the work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
one quick thing. This is a very small bill, so it's very easy to read, but could we get these sent out to us before and via email? Or maybe we are, but I'm not seeing them.
They're uploaded to OLIS, but I can send out attachments if you would like.
Yeah, because we need to, I don't see it on OLIS, but maybe I missed it, but that's real easy for me since, you know, I'm so technologically challenged. I'm like waging nuclear war with a bear skin and a stone knife when it comes to electronics. So
Don't sell yourself short. Well, we'll do what we can, and it's been on the list, and we'll have that done. Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Appreciate it. Thanks for bringing that forward. And with that, as you can see, folks, from some of the audience in the room, we're going to take this committee and go to the dogs today, which kind of it's a good day for us, and we've heard from the program before, and hopefully we get a little more enlightened as to the program and how we're going to solve some of these issues as well. So with that being said, I think what I'd like to do, because I think folks are here to testify on both the HJM before us and the House bill before us, so I will open up a joint public hearing on HJM 1 and House Bill 2159.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 1 urges Congress to overturn the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs regulation prohibiting the provision of service or therapy dogs for veterans with emotional and mental disabilities. And House Bill 2159 directs the Oregon Military Department to establish a therapy and service dog pilot program for at least 5 members of the Oregon National Guard suffering from non-physical injuries, including post-traumatic stress disorders and traumatic brain injuries. It would establish a therapy and service dog pilot program fund separate from the general fund and appropriate $75,000 to that fund. It permits federal grants and private donations to be deposited in that therapy fund. It also would require the Oregon Military Department to report findings from the pilot program to appropriate legislative committees in the 2015 regular session. The pilot program would sunset July 1st of 2015 and returns any remaining monies to the general fund. This bill declares an emergency and is effective upon passage.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. And for the audience as well, I know that a lot of folks are here, and you're very attached to the issue. I want you to know, too, that when you notice on the agenda, you'll see a public hearing and work session for HGM 1. Below that is a public hearing on House Bill 2159, which means we're not going to be able to take action on that particular House bill today, and you'll see a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Folks in the building understand what this means. Those of you that just come here every now and then on something you're passionate about, you might not understand that, but there's still a little bit more work to do on the issue, but we're here to hear about what you have to say and the importance of this issue and how it affects your lives and lives of our veterans. So, again, we are in public hearing for HGM 1 and House Bill 2159. We appreciate it if you would not be barking at the chair. That will help the hearing go much smoother. No, just kidding. Love the dogs.
I love it.
So with that being said, first up, if we could please have... Okay, so start right here.
Yeah.
We'll start with Lori Satinspiel. And also, if we can get... Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We're going to start with... Thank you for keeping me straight. Here comes Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. And if you know the General, you're going to do what he says. So, no, it's great to see you, General. Thank you very much. And with you is Deanne... Is it Simitana. Thanks so much for coming. And feel free to identify yourselves for the record and begin as you will.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. It's a pleasure to be here today, and we'd like to discuss some of the issues that we see with House Bill 2159. We have noticed, I think, and we saw the previous hearings during the interim, and you had testimony before you during that period that there are some really good evidence that has been noticed and seen and certainly portrayed to you about what the service dogs have done for many veterans who have some difficulties. We don't dispute that. We will, however, want to point out today that we don't believe that we're the agency to do a study. As simple as that. We have soldiers that we know have these care dogs, and we think anecdotally they've done quite well, and we support any effort to help these folks get better and stay better. But we don't believe that that's our role to do studies. Just to point out also to the committee, the National Defense Act of 2010 directed the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to commence a 3-year study looking at the assets, benefits, feasibility, and advisability of using service dogs for treatment or rehabilitation of veterans' physical or mental injuries or disabilities, including post-traumatic stress disorder. That study was commenced in a veterans hospital in Tampa, Florida. It started in July of 2011, had 350 patients in it at the time, and is scheduled to conclude in January of 2014. Also, we also are aware of the fact that Dwight D. Eisenhower Army Medical Center, Fort Gordon, Georgia, has established a limited assisted therapy program as part of their treatment program. In the Oregon National Guard, to make the committee completely aware of how we operate, and I said limitedly to you prior to the hearing that we are part of the process that brings soldiers in, trains them, prepares them. They get called to federal active duty. They go off to war. They come home injured. They come home with other issues. We, even with all that capacity, do not treat the soldiers. We identify the problems. We identify the diagnoses. And then we send them either to the Veterans Administration or some other Army Medical Command to offer the treatment. We don't have that capability within our organization. Just not built that way. So again, that's part of the reason I would ask you to consider us not being the agency to do the study, even though we believe in the product. We think it's working. With that, I wanted to introduce Dr. Deanne Smetana, who is also a National Guard Bureau contractor with that's applied to us through the National Guard Bureau to help us in our medical command do that diagnosis, identify those things that we don't have the capability to do, and she's on a contract. With that, I'll introduce you because we wanted to walk through what she knows in her clinical business, what a study really does entail, so the committee would know the full breadth of it. So, Deanne.
Hello, my name is Dr. Deanne Smetana, and just a little bit about who I am so that you know that I'm qualified to sit across from you is that I have a bachelor's degree in human development and family studies from Warner Pacific College, a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling from George Fox University, and then I went on to pursue a doctorate in behavioral health from Arizona State, and that's where I was the lead on a research project. I'm licensed in two states as a clinical mental health counselor in both Washington and Oregon, and I also hold a national certification for counseling. Again, just so that you know who I am and that I have been a lead on a research project. Just about what a research project design entails, if I could go over that with you guys really quickly or briefly. Research is to propose human behavior that eliminates judgments that are subjective and anecdotal. So we're looking at research methods that are scientific and systematic. We're trying to take out all biased judgments and what have you to make these be a kind of a scientific study. Research goals are to design, explain, and predict. That's what we're hoping to do when we do research. And because this research project is dealing with human subjects, there's a whole lot of protocols that go into working with human beings. We just don't get to do research on human beings because of a long history of some unethical things that were done with humans. So there's a really strict parameters around doing research with humans. And here's just some of them. The research needs to be voluntary, and the subjects need to have informed consent. We have to respect the person. They need to be treated as an autonomous agent. In other words, we can't be coercing them in any way. They have to voluntarily be a part of the study and be transparent in what the study is. They have the right to end the study anytime they would like. We have the right to safeguard integrity. The benefits need to outweigh the cost. There needs to be protection from physical, mental, and emotional harm, access to information regarding research, so the participants get to know what they're being a part of. Again, remain very transparent in the research. And we need to protect privacy and well-being. There are four basic steps to research, and again, this is basically a basic model. The first step is that we need to come up with a hypothesis, and so we're basically asking a question. And what is that question? This question needs to be observable and it needs to be measurable. There has to be operational diagnosis or definitions applied to each thing that we are looking at. And so this particular research design that has been proposed to the National Guard, there are four different topics that need to be looked at. And just using a random example, for example, if we were doing research on stress and sleep, we would have to define what sleep is, what is good sleep versus what is bad sleep, and what is stress, what is good stress, what is bad stress. So we have two very defined variables that we are considering. Good sleep to you means something than good sleep to me. Stress to me means something different than it does to you. So we need to have kind of a universal code for what we are measuring. And that's what those operational diagnoses are for. So for this particular research study, we would need to do that four different times to get these things narrowed down. Once we did that and we have the parameters of our research built, then we have to present it to what's called an IRB board. And an IRB board is an institution review board, and these reside, it's a group of professionals that reside in universities, research institutes that do these things frequently. They go over your study to make sure it's hitting all of the guidelines for human research and make sure you're hitting all of the protocols. IRB approval is a pretty big deal. It's very stringent. So if you get signed off on IRB, you're doing well. It means your research project is the way it should be. It's met all ethical standards. There's a timeline to do this. When you submit to the IRB board after your research is designed, it's 8 weeks to up to 12 weeks before you get the stamp of approval back. And there also could be cost associated with IRB, anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 per operational definition. So that's an additional cost that people could may or may not be aware of, depending upon the IRB board that you go to. After that's completed, then we've moved on to step two, which is devise the study and collect data. This is where a lot of the research goes into it. We need to select participants. We need to solicit them, interview them, and then get them to sign informed consents. From there, we define the measurement outcomes. So we've determined what mental health, emotional health, medical health, and social health are, now we need to find measurement tools that will measure those categories. And then we set a timeline. How often, what are the intervals that we want to be measuring our participants. Do we want to see these guys every once a month, every 3 months, every 6 months, once a year? How often are we going to be bringing them in to test the baseline? Because we've created a baseline initially. And then once we've got that, we move on to step three, where we examine results and draw conclusions. We're going to summarize the data, we're going to analyze the results, and then we draw those conclusions. Did we determine our hypothesis? Was it a null hypothesis? What was the end result of our study? And was there statistical significance to that? And then once we've done that, we write up our study. And that write-up goes back and explains everything we did, how we selected our participants, how we came across our operational definitions, what timeline did we use. We answer to all of that, and then we present the study to a panel, or we publish it. And that is kind of the basics of a research design project.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, and then we'll get on to the rest of the witnesses here today, again, we believe we've seen evidence anecdotally with many of our soldiers that these dogs have been extremely helpful in many of their behavioral aspects, but again, it's anecdotal, so we're not disputing that. And if we want to do a study, we did some basic analysis of where we were, what was on the table with the, I think it's $75,000 mentioned in the bill. We believe it's about half of what you really need to do the proper study. Just on looking at what the dog ownership is, looking at vet bills, etc. It's not inexpensive to maintain the animals. And secondly, we would probably recommend that if we wanted to do that, if the legislature wants to do that, maybe look at OHSU, Oregon State. We certainly would do whatever we could to help that along. So we think they'd be better suited to do this kind of work than we are. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
And thank you, sir, very much for your testimony, and yours as well. Thank you, Doctor. I guess I'll ask the committee if they have any questions for this panel. Anybody? And what I'll say is, again, I hear you loud and clear. You're not speaking against the program when you say it might be housed better somewhere else.
Correct.
And I appreciate that in this approach. What I find interesting about the therapy dogs is it was new to us probably as a committee just a couple years ago it came forward. And I remember thinking to myself, I'd never thought about that as a potential outreach for therapy. But when you think about teaching kids, one of the things I learned in going into a classroom with small children is some learn by reading, some learn by hearing, others learn mechanically by doing. And this seems like this has a chance and potential to reach people in a way that's different than sitting down saying, how are you feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty amazing. And so we look forward to the testimonies today from others. And committee members, just make sure that we don't excuse the panel prematurely. Any follow-up questions, anybody?
I might recommend you have some of these therapy dogs out here in the lobby. That would be helpful.
like one right here.
Okay.
We're going to divide them by the floors and let everybody share them.
There you
we
go.
Could use them right
there
about now. Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Doctor. And with that, we will call Lori Satinspiel, Joy St. Peter, and Robert Elstead, please. Let me just compliment everybody on their behavior. And the humans included.
Absolutely. I was going to say, which one?
I think I'll kick us off. Lori Satinspiel. I live here in Salem, Oregon, and this is my other life. I'm a board member now with the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs. Very proud to be here before you today. You've heard, and actually, hopefully, you've seen the growth in the Wiggly puppies that we brought to you in the interim at the last time we met. We're here in support of HJM-1 and House Bill 2159. We want to talk a little bit today about the program and what it's done for folks, specifically veterans. And Robert's going to speak to his specific example of post-traumatic stress. And then we want to follow with Roger here behind me, who is a veteran as well and has a therapy dog and does something a little bit different to just kind of show you some variety. I'd be happy, after we're done, to answer any questions, but I'm going to pass it to Joy.
Hi, my name is Joy St. Peter, and I am the founding director of the Joys of Living Assistance Dogs. Is that? And I'm here to speak on behalf of the dogs and what we've witnessed and what we see when we do place a dog with a veteran and the impact that it has on that person's life. And I know legally for an assistance dog, they have to be specially trained to perform a task directly related to the disability. And so that's what we do. We train them specifically, we interview them, and whether it is to alert them that something is coming up behind them or to get up in their face and saying, I'm here, I am present, and stay with me. Those are specially trained tasks specifically for the disability. Leaning on the leg and just saying that it makes me feel good isn't a legal viable reason for an assistance dog. That falls into the therapy category. And so what we do is we train the specifics for that person individually to help them go out into the public or to ride the public transit or a way to cope with some of the triggers that they have. And so that's what we do on an everyday basis of what we do. We take out the dogs that do not make the program or that do not meet standards for the public access, because we do have a responsibility to the public and to the person and to the dog that that dog remains safe and the person remains safe and the public is safe as well. And so we take great pride in seeing that all of those areas are taken care of in the training of our dogs. Thank you.
Thank you.
So before I pass it off to Robert, remember what I said, if every one of you would take a puppy on and be a trainer for us, we would have that many more dogs in the pipeline. We're a solely volunteer organization. These are all volunteers who I sent out a note to through Joy and said, we need to be at the Capitol to show our support for veterans. And here they all are. It's an amazing organization that has grown. And we're just excited to be here to show what we can do for veterans. And with that, we'll go to Robert.
And it should be noted, too, that I appreciate that you're in this building on a regular basis, so we see you often. But you are also here as a volunteer for this organization, and you got involved because of your heart. Yep. So thank you. And as far as taking on a puppy, you've never met my 7-year-old. So we're going to go on. I'm joking. She's a wonderful little girl.
Yes, I'm Robert Elstead. I'm a veteran. I was in the Army 3 years and then the Air Force Reserve thereafter. I worked as an MP. I developed PTSD through life things through the military and in everyday life before that too. A lot of people say, I don't understand what you're going through, but I think people do. Like, for instance, when they see a scary movie the music's intense and they feel something's about to happen, you know something's about to happen. It's like that most of the time. Mm-hmm. With PTSD, we drive away those people that we love, because we're really hard to deal with our ups and down emotions, the depression that goes with it. When JJ came into my life a year ago, they were trying different meds, and a lot of them worked against me. All of them are fit, different people. I went off my meds. My meds had quite an effect on me, so I was very dizzy. JJ was fitted for a harness, so I could walk. I'm very healthy, but the meds made me so I felt like I was on a sea ship. Everything was very hard. So JJ was fitted with a harness so that I could hang on to, so I could feel confident in walking again. JJ goes to class with me at PCC. He puts his foot his head on my foot. And I do my best to focus on what I'm doing because he's watching around me. If his head comes up off my foot, then I'll look at the direction that he looked, but that gets pretty rare if there's something different or someone that's not regularly in the room. He helps me to get to the VA, helps me to get on that public transport. That's very hard to do. He's changed my life. He saved my life. More than once. And I look forward to the rest of my life with him. Thank you.
And Robert is, he's trained, and he's a part of our program as a trainer, and he's trained his own dog, JJ, which he's been petting underneath the table here for support throughout this testimony. So thanks, Robert. We'd be happy to answer questions before.
Thank you. Yes, and on behalf of the committee, Robert, let me just say thank you for sharing your story and having the courage to come before us and sharing your story. We've met you before. It's great to see you again. But I will say that when you share your story, when vets come through this door and share their experience, there's other vets that are out there thinking, I'm sure glad he's saying those things because it helps us all. So thank you for
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that because there are other vets that I know and that are in the room today that are very aware and they have their own dogs and are interested in how we might be able to help them get to where Robert is. Mm-hmm. And I want to take a moment and thank Representative Parrish for coming to our dog graduation we had last fall. It was very powerful. We have a ceremony, and the dogs then pass from all of our volunteers with a lot of tears, and they're passed on to their human to go to work. And it's a great thing to watch and be involved in. And I just wanted to thank you for showing up and being a part of that.
Can I?
And with that, yes, Representative Parrish.
Larry, can you tell us though the story of the gentleman who I sat next to at dinner? Because I think it's important to understand that there is a time wait for folks who need these dogs. I think he waited 2 years. And, you know, it's a tough story, but I think it's important to get on the record.
Okay, Joy, that's your.
Devon England came to me 2 years ago, and he applied for a dog. Our waiting list right now is almost 3 years. At the time, it was two. And it was almost 2 years, exactly, by the time he really did get his dog, and he came to training camp, and he graduated with his dog. And he didn't have a way to get to Salem because he lived in Medford, and the VA wouldn't recognize his need for a dog, and so they would not help him, and he has no family in the area. So I made the trip myself to Medford and brought him up here, and we transported him all around for 2 weeks. We ended up taking him to the hospital once, and we took care of all of his needs while he was here. After graduation, I took him back to Medford, and the appreciation that man showed was absolutely immeasurable. What had happened is we follow up with the dogs after placement to make sure everything's going okay. And I spoke with him one afternoon, and he thanked me for restoring his faith in humanity and couldn't appreciate what we did for him enough. But it wasn't just us, it was the dogs, his everyday life, making him feel safe and secure and helping him pick up things and get out his door, because he could hardly get out his door the way it was arranged, and had a heart attack that night. He went in the hospital and was there for a week and was released, called his daughter, and passed away. And he had his dog for 4 months, but in that 4 months, it restored everything that he had, and that was worth it. So I went down and picked up the dog, and we will be replacing the dog with a new person. But those are the stories that we see every day. We see the difference that they make in their life. And sorry for being emotional, but it was very nice to hear his last words was to say thank you. You restored my faith.
Thank you for sharing.
And I just want to follow up. This was a gentleman who was a Vietnam vet. He was semi-ambulatory in a wheelchair, couldn't move around. The dog is putting socks and shoes on and helping him with personal care and everyday life. And the fact that he had to wait 2 years is distressing. And then the fact that he barely got to see that, come to fruition in such a short amount of time, and then to watch that tragedy. I mean, it speaks to what we talked about earlier in this week about our Vietnam War veterans dying at a quick clip. And, and so anything we can do to speed up the connection, I think, to programs like this to people is we need to do that. And I did have one veteran contact me, I might have said this last time, and when I told her of the wait time, she just simply said, I don't have that much time, I won't make it. Because she was in too much distress, and that's a very hard place to be in, to hear somebody say that. I can't wait. And I know that she's right. Thank you.
Members, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is really compelling stories. My question is about, well, I hope to do this someday, too. I know I can't do it while I'm doing this, but, sure. Bring my dog to work.
Ramon would have a heart attack.
Separating from the dog would be tough. But how does one, like Robert, you were able to train your own dog, so that would lower that time frame, and you have a real hands-on situation. How is that done? Can people do that?
I would like to answer that, and yeah. It's not something I normally do, but in Robert's case, it was the right thing to do because of the situation, and I had a dog that I could see would fit for him, but a lot of times if they do train their own dog, we don't know whether it's going to make it, and if it doesn't make it, then that's another loss for them, that we have to pull that dog from them, and they've bonded with it, and they've put their heart and soul into that, and then I say, I'm sorry, it has too much prey drive, or, you know, it's too friendly, or whatever the reasons why it won't make it, and I pull that dog for them. However, if we could set up a program to where they're very clear, and Robert was very, him and I had a very clear understanding that this dog may not make it. Are you prepared to handle that? And let me tell you, he's worked his butt off to make sure it did.
Great question. Any other questions? So let me just ask, if a dog doesn't pass the program, then do you place them with other homes? Do you have a waiting list for folks to make contributions to your program? Is that how that works?
Yeah, we sell them as pets in a direction that lends to why they were released. We had one puppy didn't make it, and it had too much prey drive. Anything moved, and it thought it had to catch it. So we placed it with a family that had an orchard and wanted a dog to chase the deer and the squirrels out of the trees. And so that dog is going to live a very happy life.
And, Mr. Chair, real quickly, I actually try to coordinate that. I have a database of some folks who have, as soon as we have a dog that needs to have a career change, and it starts here and it has all these various pathways, it can get to be in service, not necessarily with a veteran. It can be autism, wheelchair access, whatever. But I had veterans calling to ask if they could adopt or buy a career change dog. That's how the need is out there. But yes, and we try to recover at least as much as we put into the dog as a price range based on how long it's been with us.
And so if you indulge me, committee, so for the actual veteran that's going to be the dog's going to be placed with, when are they notified that they're going to receive the dog? Certainly they must participate in part of the training, is that correct?
We usually train the dog for about a year and a half, and we interview the people that are interested in getting a dog, and then we are looking for the personality profile that's going to fit that person and their lifestyle. And then we may have about two dogs that may fit in that, or three dogs, and then we're going to have that person meet those three dogs. Then we figure out which one is actually going to go to that person, and then we interview real in-depth again, what specifically do you need from this dog? The last 6 months of the dog's training is specifically for that person, and for anything that we don't outside of the realm of what we train. And then they have to come and do 2 weeks training. They have to pass a public access test, and then we do follow-ups with them for the rest of the dog's life to make sure that everything is working well.
Okay, and then last thing, and I know that we also want to bring up Roger, but when you say there's about a three-year waiting list right now, can you give us an idea, like, what's the volume of that list? So what's the number associated with 3 years? How many folks are waiting?
I probably have about 32 people on my list.
So if Representative Boone took seven dogs.
Yeah, I was going to say.
General Caldwell,
I live in the country, so they'd like it. But
this will be just like the military. We'll volunteer her.
Yes, exactly.
I have a litter of 9 puppies that I'm looking for volunteers for.
Oh, my.
9 days old.
And any other questions of the committee of this panel? And if you'd like to stay with Roger, he can come join you. That would be fine, too. So if we can just make a little room, if we could have Roger LeBar. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's
Representative Parrish.
Just
Joy, you do a fantastic job, and I know you've shared the story before. We do have a new member on the committee. Just real quick about why you do this and how you got into this.
I got into this because I've always loved animals, and it was my passion was with the animals. And when I found out what they could do, then I was very, very impressed of what I could do with the dogs and what the dogs could do for people. And with my bond through the dogs, and then when I saw that it could take further than I ever had, the bond and the relationship, I was really impressed. And then I was found somebody that was doing this as a puppy raiser, and I followed her around till she thought I was stalking her, because I wanted to know as much as I could. I got an opportunity to go to ADI in Santa Rosa and get my accreditation to be a service dog trainer, and came back and started the nonprofit. And what I have seen and the relationship is beyond what I ever thought it would be, but it was through my relationship through the animals and what they helped me with. Nobody has a perfect childhood, neither was mine, and growing up on a farm, my solace was the barn, and that's where it came from. And so I'm very proud to be a part of this and be able to give other people that piece that gave me such solace when I was growing up.
That's great.
Thank you.
Okay, and if we can bring Roger up, and if we can just make room for Roger on the panel, that would be great. So, Mr. LeBar, if you would, please. And Augie, I think, is joining.
I could assign him to their drill duty.
And again, thanks, Mr. Elstead. We really appreciate it.
You got it. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
There's Augie.
Ooh, Augie doggie.
It happens in this building. We understand.
Good afternoon. My name's Roger LeBar, and this is Augie Doggie. And Augie and I are a team. We're a Delta therapy team, and we're currently on staff at Salem Hospital. Augie, sit. Sit. Lay down. Lay down. Stay. Augie is 8 years old. And 8 years ago, when I got Augie, he was 6 weeks old. I did not have the intention of turning Augie into a therapy dog. I was suffering at that time from clinical depression, from chronic pain, from anxiety issues, and also from insomnia within 2 years. And I might add that I'm a veteran. I served in the U.S. Army from 65 to 68. Whether these issues were PTSD, I don't know. I've never been diagnosed with that. I'm not going to roll that all up into PTSD. I'm just saying that I'm a veteran. Within 2 years after getting Augie, I was taking no medication of any kind and suffered from none of those symptoms that I just listed. Augie's not a magic pill. Okay. What he did for me was he got me motivated to go out and walk, to exercise, to get into a good therapy plan that didn't involve drugs and those kind of medical things. And I've been medication-free and free from no symptoms now for 6 years. So a couple of years ago, I realized his gift, what he'd given me, and I made the decision to turn Augie into a therapy dog. And that involved the Canine Good Citizen Program through the American Kennel Club. And it also involved the Delta Therapy Program. Now that's called Pet Partners. Augie was not a puppy-raising type dog. He was my dog from the get-go and will be forever. My vet saw Augie after I trained him and told me I should make him into a service dog. And I said, a service dog? Hell, he's a my dog. A service dog. So Augie and I will be around for the long term. He really enjoys doing the therapy work that he does. And I would say that if you've ever witnessed a therapy dog in action doing what they do, no explanations necessary. And if you haven't seen it with your own eyes, no explanation is possible. Mm-hmm. It's magical. So I know that the bond between an animal and a person, you know, if you happen to be an animal lover, and they can do for you what nothing else that I know of can do. and it would be a boon to veterans. I know these people do wonderful work by doing the puppy raising. Personally, I could never do that because I bonded with Augie the very first 24 hours I had him, and I think if I tried raising puppies, I would bond with them as well, and I'd just have a whole pack of them be going around with. I'd never turn them loose, but that's just me. But anyway, thank you for hearing my story today, and that's about all I've got.
Thank you.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for your testimony. Committee members, any questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you. Remind me of my neighbor who's gone now, but he was a Czech war hero, and he fought for all sides at all the same time. If you can imagine, that's a double, triple, whatever agent. And his and he was World War II, but when he was retired from the military, obviously, and living in our neighborhood, he was also our sheriff's father. But he had dogs, and you know, although he couldn't get along with a lot of the people in the neighborhood, and we have a true feud in our neighborhood when he was alive, and but these dogs were his solace, and you could just tell, and you know, you say watching them, and you know, we had dogs, and he would come over, and of course his dogs didn't get along with my dogs, but you could just look at my dog with him, sans his dog. And they just bonded. When we had a wedding outside, all the dogs were barking and everything. We sent Milo over to the kennel, and he just sat in the kennel with the dogs and kept them quiet, and they were happy. And it was just that, you know what you're talking about. And I don't think that he had trained dogs or anything. Mine certainly weren't. But thank you for sharing that, too.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Representative. Anybody else on the committee have anything for this panel? Thank you so much for being here today, and thanks for being in the building. Very coordinated effort. And with that, is there anybody else out there that wanted to testify on HJM 1 or House Bill 2159? Thank you. We will close the public hearing on HJM 1 and House Bill 2159, and we will open a work session on HJM 1.
Chair Matthews, I move HJM 1 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Parrish moves HJM 1 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Just want to put on the record that I hate urge Congress bills. They do nothing. And I said that the other day on the House floor. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to support this on the floor, and I'm going to vote for it out of committee. But I think, you know, when Congress abdicates its responsibility to take care of folks, then it's our job to fill the gap. So I'll support it, but I don't like urge Congress bills.
I understand. And I would say that our responsibility does not end with this vote.
That's right.
We can urge Congress differently than a lot of our constituents. So very good and duly noted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, and I want to echo a little bit about what our vice chair is saying here, because ever since I've been in this building, I've been urging Congress, and so far it has the same results as when I walked in the door. So maybe we'll just keep chipping away at it.
Well, Representative, you have urged me to do several things, and I have done those. So, so you are effective, sir. Any further discussion? Yes, Representative Boone.
In defense of our Congress and my Congress people, and I have two of them in my district, one who's not mine, so I count him too, but I went to a hearing in Brookings the other day, and he actually said, yeah, I got your memorial, or I've heard back from them.
Good.
They do read them, so, you know, and it really does make a difference if you weigh in, so I have to say that.
We always have to be cautious, too, because our Oregon delegation has been working together on a lot of issues, mm-hmm. and sometimes we're upset at the, like a lot of folks can be upset with us, you're upset about the overall body, not necessarily the performance of a few.
That's true.
So, very good. With that, is there any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Booth?
Aye.
Representative
Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative
Hupkin?
Aye.
Representative Quinn?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bainett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. HJM 1 is adopted. And we will need a carrier for the measure. Who would like to urge Congress on the floor of the House?
Sir, I have been doing it for quite some time, so I'm quite proficient at it. If you would like me to carry this bill, I will again urge Congress.
Representative Esquivel, I'd be honored for you to carry this. Thank you very much. And HJM 1 will be carried by the good representative. Thank you, Representative Esquivel. And with that, colleagues, I do believe we have our fiscal impact statements back on House Bill 2421 and House Bill 2422. Is that correct, Ms. Edwards?
Yes, that's correct.
And so with that, I see that there's no subsequent referral on either of these bills. I don't know if the committee is comfortable moving these today or not, but I certainly am. It would be my desire to do so. But I also understand if somebody needs more time. Seeing the committee perhaps ready to act, shall we move forward? And with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2421.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2421, as described on the record before, would instruct the Oregon Department of Transportation to share the names and addresses of service members and veterans with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs on a monthly basis when service members or veterans make written inquiry regarding applications for licenses, identification cards, certificates of vehicle title, or vehicle registrations. It will require service members or the veterans' written authorization for the release of his or her name to the ODVA, and it authorizes ODOT to adopt rules in consultation with the ODVA regarding the method of implementing the notification procedure. There is a -1 amendment. It changes the recipient of the notification to the Director of Veterans Affairs rather than the Director of Transportation. And there's a no revenue impact statement, and there is a fiscal impact statement. And those should be included in your packets and also on OLIS.
And just to refresh the committee, we have moved the -1 amendments already into House Bill 2421. Is that correct, or have we not?
It was not adopted.
Okay. We did not. We have no desire to. Is that correct? We moved 2421 as bill?
We need to adopt the amendment and then move it as amended.
Understood.
Yeah.
Great. So first order of business will be to move the -1 amendment. If I could get some assistance with this. Oh, thank you.
Chair Matthews, I move to adopt the -1 amendment to House Bill 2421, dated February 18th, 2013.
Representative Fagan moves to adopt -1 amendment to House Bill 2421, dated February 18th of 2013. Is there any discussion on the -1 amendment?
Representative Huffman. What did that do again? Refresh my memory.
On page 1 of the printed bill, line 22, it deletes transportation. It inserts Veterans Affairs. So the overall objective, I think, was to put this into. Let me get the bill.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee,
yes.
It's my understanding that's correcting a typo. Mm-hmm. The way the bill was written, it would have directed the notification back to the Department of Transportation. This allows the notification to go to the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Other than just the circular process. Of,
yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There you go. Any further discussion? Is there objection? If not, the -1 amendment is adopted.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2421 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2421 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Yes, Representative Escobar.
I'm just curious. I have this. Maybe I've missed something here, but I have a fiscal impact of $100,000. Wouldn't this be a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Our initial request was to determine whether or not that would be subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and it came back as no subsequent referral. So the recommendation is that it wouldn't be referred.
Wow. Interesting.
Very. Any further discussion? Any further discussion?
Well,
I think you got the budget.
Chair,
this.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Exactly. I'm at a loss here. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure if it's magic. I'm not sure if it has something to do with the fact that the committee has been, not the committee, but the agency has been working very hard on the issue as well. Some of this may be that they've been able to come forward saying that we have a way to do this, but it does have a subsequent referral. And I don't know if the agency would like to come forward or not. Ms. Joyce, did you want to come forward? And you may be as puzzled as we are, but it's rare that we see numbers attached to a document that don't have a subsequent referral. And so if you could help shed light, perhaps.
If my memory serves me correct, we used to be able to do 50,000 or less. We could go ahead and pass those through. But anything over 50,000, I believe we had to refer to Ways and Means. Does that sound familiar to everyone?
We will find out. And please state for the record your name and any clarification you might be able to give us.
Chair Matthews and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. I am, in fact, as puzzled as you are about the lack of a referral.
We're all puzzled. I love
my thought on this, as Representative Esquivel mentioned about the typical cutoff that has existed in past sessions, compounded by the fact that this expenditure is not highway fund eligible, and of course the department is the vast majority of the funding is highway fund, so there would need to be another source. So I'm at a loss as to why there is not a subsequent referral at this time.
And thank you for that. And members, let's just stand at ease for just 2 minutes, we'll get some clarity here real quick. And we may be that we want to default and do a subsequent referral, given the fact that we've got a sum of money that I think all of us, whether we're supportive of the concept, which we are, we still might be a little more comfortable if we had some other eyes on this. So we'll stand at ease just for a couple minutes.
I think I see eight people left in the room. If we just
always have dogs in the room.
And we're back. Committee members, we were in work session on House Bill 2421. We had moved the Dash 1 amendments. What we will do now is we will close the work session on House Bill 2421 with the bill as amended with the Dash 1. And what we'll do is we will carry this over until Thursday's agenda. So with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2421. And we will open a work session on House Bill 2422. And House Bill 2422.
Chair Matthews, I move House Bill 2422 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Fagan moves House Bill 2422 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on House Bill 2422? The fiscal is indeterminate. I believe we can act on this. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Chair Matthews?
Aye. The motion passes. Oop, there we go, a little premature. House Bill 2422 is moved to the floor, and we need a carrier for House Bill 2422. Does anybody on the committee have a desire to carry that bill?
Can we just put that as a consent agenda? Do we really need to, like, describe
that
it?
That involves
or?
DHS, and it's outreach to veterans. Okay. And quite honestly, my interpretation would be, I'd like to see us talk about veterans issues as often as possible
okay.
on the floor of the House.
There we go.
So with that,
I'm going to carry it as well, since it's Esquivel Day there, obviously.
I'm happy to provide some comments. As you know, Derek Bradley and my office worked hard during the interim, and we'll certainly add some comments to the bill. So
I request that the chairman look past me, because I see Representative Witt always hides behind me when I'm looking when they're asking
Shirking
for volunteers. Make
there.
It easy for
Thank
him.
You.
So Representative Esquivel, were you volunteering to carry House Bill 242?
I always love to volunteer for you, sir.
Thank you. And this isn't a three-year commitment, so good for you.
That's right.
Wonderful. So Representative Esquivel will carry the bill. Committee members, anything else for the good of the order? Yes, Representative.
As long as Representative Esquivel is volunteering, I say we sign him up for a couple of dogs.
My problem is I would never give him back.
Yeah.
The separation anxiety has got to be pretty large with that. So,
what's that? We can have a committee dog.
Anything else for the good of the order from the committee? Appreciate your time and effort, and for the committee too. We're going to be doing a review of for those of you that were here in 2009 or in 2007. You might recall in 2008 you were passing
or four.
The initiatives that came out of the task force with how to reach out and assist our veterans. We're going to do kind of a review of that and have an informational meeting in terms of what's working, what's not, what needs to be revamped, and it's going to get. We'll have that hearing before all the committee bills. Get dropped, because some of us might want to take action and assist in areas that needs a little help. So
this will be Thursday, you say?
I don't believe that's up on Thursday. That's coming up in the next couple weeks, I think. Are we a few weeks out?
Yeah, I think.
Were you on the first day?
Mid to late March, as told by the gal that keeps us organized, and I appreciate your work. Thank you, Elizabeth. And with that, we will close the House Committee on Veterans Services and Emergency Preparedness, and thank you all. Have a great day and a safe drive home.